Great to have you with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and it's time for another book club meeting, the Larry Mueller Show Book Club. We're talking about the book today on the show titled When I'm Dead. And just a reminder, in the book club, we like to feature books written by Wisconsin authors and or books set in Wisconsin. And today we have both. And our author with us, Hannah Morrissey, writes the book, or has written the book we're talking about today. She writes the Black Harbor Suspense series, a couple of other books in that series, one Hello Transcriber, the other titled The Widowmaker. She grew up in a small, on a farm, actually, in northern Wisconsin. She now lives in Milwaukee with her husband. And it's great to have her with us today to talk about her book, When I'm Dead. I really enjoyed it, and for those of you who have read it, I bet you did as well. So if you read the book, let us know what you thought about the book, or maybe you have a question about the book itself. Or if you didn't read the book, certainly love to hear from you as well. Maybe you want to know about the research Hannah does on her crime and detective work. Want to hear from you. Regardless, the number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Hannah Morrissey, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed your book. It was a lot of fun and a little chilling.
Good. bone chilling, I hope.
Bone chilling is a proper term for it. And the title, When I'm Dead. What gave you the idea for the book?
Oh, that's a really great question. I think with all of my books so far in the Black Harbor series, I've really been interested in the kind of periphery characters of law enforcement. So I love writing my detective characters, but I'm really interested in like those supporting characters. So in Hello Transcriber, the protagonist was a transcriber, a police transcriber, and I used to do that job, actually. Mm-hmm. And then in The Widowmaker, a little bit different. The other main character is a photographer who's paired up with a detective. And honestly, with When I'm Dead, one of my friends suggested you should write a book with a medical examiner as the main character. And I was like, that would be super cool. And I know absolutely nothing about medical examiners. So I needed to go find one. And
so you found one.
I did. And she was just wonderful and just helped me a lot. I love doing my research of just really getting out there and talking to people in those professions.
So you've got what you call the murder board.
Yes.
And so the medical examiner you met, she must be part of the murder board.
Oh, they're all on the murder board. Yeah, the murder board has become an integral part of my writing process, I guess. I mean, every writer has their own process, and for me, it starts and ends with the murder board. The murder board came about when I was working on The Widowmaker, the second book in the series, and there were just so many characters, and not just the sheer amount of characters, but just they all connected, like in some way or multiple ways in some cases, and I was like, I need one of those big whiteboards like the detectives have in the bureau, like with
sure.
the string connecting the yeah. characters and stuff. So I've been making those for myself. I just print out my characters' pictures, I write them little bios, I connect them, and that's the murder board.
it's great.
Oh, thank you.
And you met the medical examiner, if I'm not mistaken. I remember a reading mm-hmm. at the end. You met her at a coffee shop or a bar or something. And
yeah. Oh, my gosh. It was, I don't even know what she looked like. I just remembered from my days as a police transcriber that there was this, I think we had four medical examiners for our county. And I'm like, there was one who the cops always wanted her to show up on the scene because she was so thorough and would explain things in a way that
were helpful, I suppose.
Was helpful and like just very understandable to people who weren't medical examiners. And I asked my husband, who's in law enforcement, I asked him, I said, do you remember who that was? And he said, oh, that's Becky. And I was like, could I talk to Becky? So he called Becky's husband and explained, my wife is writing a book. She wants to have a medical examiner character. Could she talk to her? And yeah, Becky just met me out at some hole-in-the-wall bar and just told me like everything she knows.
And the side comment you had in that at the end there was everybody was trying to listen.
Oh my gosh, you should have seen the rubbernecking.
Everybody was trying to listen in on your conversation.
Yes.
Well, we should, for those who haven't read your book, tell me, When I'm Dead, mm-hmm. Maybe first give us the outline of the book.
Yeah.
And the reason for the title, When I'm Dead.
For sure, yeah. So When I'm Dead, I'm biased, but I do think now is the perfect time of year to read it because it does take place over Halloween. And so it starts off, there's a main character, our medical examiner, Rowan, and her husband is Axel. He's a homicide detective. And they live in this very crime-ridden, you know, fictionalized Wisconsin town of Black Harbor. And you can imagine if it's this very crime-ridden city, Rowan and Axel are very busy with their careers all the time. And I just kind of started thinking about that. Like, you know, if both of your parents are in law enforcement, you might feel, you know, a little bit alone sometimes. And taking, you know, putting a child in there who's, you know, teenage, like these formative years, and like teenagers can be angsty. I think we know that. So, you know, just this idea that Axel and Rowan are going to their daughter, Chloe, who's 15. They're going to her high school play. And in the middle of it, they get called out to investigate a murder that's happened in their neighborhood. And so they leave quickly at intermission. They go investigate this murder. And the victim is Chloe's best friend. And then when they return home that night, Chloe is missing.
Yeah.
So it becomes a question of, I mean, number one, where is Chloe? But then the more they like delve into their daughter's history and like what they know about her, or maybe don't know about her, it becomes, you know, is she capable of murder and is she culpable?
Yeah. Give us a sense. Can you read a page or so from the book to give us a sense of what it sounds like? Yeah, something right from the beginning, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the beginning's the best place to start, right? Yeah. So the first, this chapter is from Rowan's perspective, the mom, and it starts, "You'll love me more when I'm dead." The memory of her daughter's words makes the hair on the back of her neck stand up. Or perhaps it's just Black Harbor and the way she can't help but feel chilled to the bone whenever she finds herself skulking in its shadows. 18 years in this purgatory, Rowan would have thought she'd be used to it by now. It could be that there are some things you never get used to. Babies in dumpsters, brains smeared on sidewalks, junkies lying on the lawn, their last needle offering a stiff salute from their basilic vein. Dead girls in gullies. Shards of white glint on the river rocks, little snowflake fractals. But it's only mid-October in Wisconsin, which means it's too early for anything but hoarfrost. The broken triangles are teeth, knocked out of the skull of her daughter's best friend. Madison Caldwell lives just around the bend, a handful of houses down. Lived. Rowan shines her flashlight on the corpse. It stares up at a starless sky, head nesting on tendrils of blonde hair. The skin is snowy and soft. The eyes float in pools of plum-colored bruises. Crouching low, Rowan flutters the eyelashes and receives no response. She presses two fingers to the victim's neck then and feels nothing. After she lifts them, her prints stay there in white, blanching the skin. Next to them is a red mark. Rowan squints and leans closer. A hickey? She turns the victim's head and examines the other side. A second mark peeks from beneath the hood. With her work phone, she snaps a picture of each injury and hears the sound of leaves shuffling as an evidence technician crouches to place a yellow placard by what appears to be a set of house keys. No chance they belong to the killer. They wouldn't get that lucky. The scene is crawling with law enforcement. There are 10 officers with flashlights and black memo pads, including the 4 members of the Violent Crime Task Force. At least 2 officers must have gone to notify the parents. It's a responsibility usually reserved for a sergeant or lieutenant, but they're too shorthanded to be concerned about formalities. A 15-year-old girl is dead. Someone has to tell her parents.
Oh. Okay, I think that's a good that's a good way to start the book. You're right. This Black Harbor, maybe give us a tour of Black Harbor. Can you give us a tour of Black Harbor?
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people ask, like, you know, why Black Harbor? Why make a fictionalized city, you know, versus like just taking, you know, a real place? And, you know, why the Midwest? And I think those are all, you know, super valid questions. And for me, for Black Harbor, it is very much inspired by like this southern part of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Especially by the lake, like by Lake Michigan. I'm just so fascinated by that area. I love like just the way that the lake is eating the shoreline, and it feels like everything's getting pushed together and compressed. And I love these cities that, you know, they were once titans of industry. And when industry moves out, crime moves in. And so I love playing with that, like in my writing, like having the atmosphere create these really high tensions and then putting these characters who, you know, have to deal with that. And so, yeah, Black Harbor, I mean, really the idea came about when I was working at the Racine Police Department as a police transcriber, and I would work the night shift. So I worked 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And I think it's important to think about what lens you're seeing the world, because you're asleep during daylight when normal things are happening. And then when I'm awake, it's just typing. I would just put on a headset and listen as detectives would tell me every dirty little secret about the city that was happening, all the murders, the robberies, you know, and anything you could think of, literally. And I would just type that in the dark all the time. And we would get a fair number of like suicides, like jumpers from the railroad bridge. And I used to see this railroad bridge all the time. Every time I drove into work and when I would drive home from work, that railroad bridge was there. And I love that bridge because it's so scary. And I would just sit at my desk and think, like, what kind of place is so bad that people think the only way out is to jump off that bridge? And that's what got me creating this Black Harbor.
Hannah Morrissey, our guest today, she's the author of, obviously, crime fiction is what she does. And believe me, she does it well. And the book we're talking about, our book club selection, is titled When I'm Dead. Questions for her? I hope you'll join in, or some comments. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look today at the book When I'm Dead with the author Hannah Morrissey, part of our book club selection on the Larry Mueller Show Book Club. It's great to have her with us. Questions, thoughts for her, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I think your books have been called maybe the best part of Midwest noir subgenre. How accurate is that? You know, what is that? How accurate is that label?
I'm very happy to have, you know, kind of carved out this new niche of Midwestern noir. It comes from, I've thought about this a lot, you know, especially when people say, why the Midwest? And especially like, you know, why are you writing thrillers and crime fiction, you know, in the Midwest? And I think about Scandinavian noir and the elements of Scandinavian noir, which often is a, you know, a cold, remote setting.
Yeah.
And, you know, If the people won't kill you in those books, the elements will.
Yeah.
And we have that here. I mean, we have the cold, remote settings, the dark, you know, everlasting nights, it seems, like these perpetual winters. And I just think, why not? I mean, we absolutely have that here, and the Midwest is so much more than these flyover states that we get, you know, that we get pegged as. And I think that in fiction, the Midwest is often underrepresented.
Yeah.
And I just, that was something that was really funny to me when I started out my publishing journey, because, you know, when you start out, you need to get a literary agent.
Yeah.
And once you finally get some interest, I mean, it took me several manuscripts to finally get some interest from a literary agent. And then once one calls you, then there's a bunch of people, then there's a bunch of them calling you, because they're like, oh, this must be good. So they would all say, we just love the setting, we love the atmosphere. And finally I was like, why? And they're like, well, it's exotic to us. And I was like, exotic? And they're like, well, you know, most of us are in New York, and a lot of books take place in New York or New England or, you know, Massachusetts. So they're like, we never get to go to Wisconsin.
that is amazing. But you got to get that. You got to work to get that first one, and then.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I wasn't writing thrillers before either, so this was my first foray into thrillers. I guess was what I was really meant to be writing. So.
So you have many threads that run through the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how you use your chapters as, I think there's three people who are primarily, I think the murderer gets a chapter or two at the end, but you write from the perspective of an individual.
Right.
So it's Alex, it's Libby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
Rowan.
Yep. I suddenly blanked on her name there for a minute.
This is a quiz.
So those are the three, I think.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, that was such a challenge of this book, but I really enjoyed it. Just thinking about, I knew that I wanted to have Rowan, the medical examiner, and the mom be a point of view character. And I knew that I wanted her husband, Axel, the homicide detective, and the dad to be a point of view character, because I liked the tension that I could create between the two of them.
Oh,
of,
yeah.
You know, they both have one, they have the same goal. They want to find their daughter, but they have differing opinions on how to do it, and they have differing opinions on who she is. So I really liked that, having these two characters who should absolutely be coming together in this time of crisis be kind of torn apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, also like they're grieving parents. So that's another element to add to their relationship dynamic. But then, so I'm like, that's great. Rowan can get me up close with the bodies because, I mean,
yeah,
there's going to be more than one body.
Yeah.
It's Black Harbor after all. So Rowan can get me up close to the body. She can get me into the morgue, because why would you write a medical examiner character if you're not going to go into the morgue? And Axel can get me up close to the investigation. He can get me to canvassing, interviewing suspects, and like actually working the case. But then I realized, I'm like, I need another lens. I need to know what's happening in that school, because that's the first place you would look.
The high school.
Right. If a 15-year-old is missing and there's been rumors going around about her and other people and, you know, teachers and whatnot, like you're going to need to be in that school.
Yeah, and one of them's murdered.
Right.
And one of the
yeah, yeah. So that's where Libby, the 16-year-old neighbor, became a point of view character, because she could get me in. She could get me into the school.
I really like that. It seemed to move the book. It was
good.
A nice way to move the book mm-hmm. forward.
Yeah.
And I also like your technique of, which is, other authors do this as well, but you do it particularly well, which is to give us maybe sometimes it's not so little, but the last sentence or two sentences of every chapter there's some fact.
Oh, good.
Or there's something that's almost forces you to read the next chapter and keep moving.
Oh, good. I work at that. Every that's kind of a rule of thrillers is that every chapter should end on either a revelation or a like dun dun dun.
Yeah. Well, it does that, and you good. And Libby. I think I found her almost the most interesting. Describe Libby.
Libby is one of my favorite things to come out of this book. And I was nervous to write her at first because I don't typically write like teenage characters. And I was nervous because I'm like, I don't want it to sound like a young adult book. And I want her to be a believable 16-year-old. Sometimes you read books and it's a pet peeve of mine when the kids are too smart.
Yeah.
So I actually had fun with having her misstep and mess up sometimes because she's going to sometimes think that she's smarter than she is. And so Libby is, you know, she's the girl next door. She's very awkward. She's very insecure. And she has she's definitely got a quirk. And the thing about quirks is they're great because they make your characters memorable, but they're even better when that quirk gets them in trouble. And so Libby's quirk, I guess, is that she has an affinity for dead things and she likes taxidermy. And when characters, you know, start up being murdered and missing pieces, it's not looking so good for Libby.
Yeah, she's one of the suspects. Yeah. There are quite a few suspects in the book. There's four that come to mind right off the top of my head. There's even Chloe, the missing daughter, comes as one, and Libby herself. And there's a drama teacher, Mr. Cutler.
Yep.
And there's Reeves.
Yep.
Who is the boyfriend of the murdered girl and a soccer player and a big athlete and so forth. But a kid that has a sensitive kid in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So those, and then there's another, I mean, I always write down the number of characters, you know, as I'm reading. I can show you how I take notes.
Oh, it's like your own little murder board.
I have my own little murder board, and I always write down all of the various people. And there's at least a dozen other, you know, total of at least a dozen characters. In fact, it's more like 15, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like with this. I suppose, you know, not to, you know, pat myself on the back, but what I'm pleased about with this world of Black Harbor is that it's basically, you know, it's this environment that I can just draw from and like pull characters from. And, you know, some of them do appear in other books. So, I mean, When I'm Dead reads as a standalone because it is a unique set of protagonists. It's a whole new mystery, but there are characters that will hop into, you know, different books throughout the series. And what I've learned about the people in Black Harbor is like everyone kind of deserves a side eye. Like nobody's super wholesome here in this town.
Jeff, did we take a break yet? I can't remember. We did take the first break and I've forgotten about it. This conversation is going is so much fun. I can't remember what I've done and what I haven't done. So that's a good thing. You can join in too. We got an email from Barry, but you can email us a question if you want. Ideas at talk@wpr.org or give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Barry emailed us. He says, it sounds like an interesting book. Your author reminded him of a passage in Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled, where he describes a man who's driving toward an underpass, and the thought occurs to him that the bridge is going to fall on him. So he avoids the underpass and finds another route home, and that night he's lying in bed and thinking that his avoiding the bridge was ridiculous. So he puts his coat on over his pajamas and drives down to the bridge and drives underneath it over and over again until a cop sees him and wonders what he's up to. Peck says that insane behavior is usually a reaction to otherwise common stimuli. Yeah. A good premise for murder. What do you think?
Yeah.
One of the things that you do really well is describing people and the settings, the high school, what goes on in a high school with the kids,
mm-hmm.
and unbeknownst to parents,
right?
A lot. You do a great job of explaining the sort of the dynamics.
Oh, thank you.
Going on between kids, the kids themselves in the school, and then between the kids and some of the teachers.
Mm-hmm. I was nervous about that too.
It's really good.
Oh,
thought,
thank
oh,
you.
Man, it made me think about my own high school days.
Good. Well, God, I was just thinking. I'm like, it has been. I couldn't tell you how long it's been since I've been in a school,
yeah.
But I was like, what happens in these schools? So luckily, just like I, you know, had my friend, the medical examiner, I had my friend Elena, who I think she was 16, 17 at the time I was writing this book,
mm-hmm.
My friend's daughter. So I would just ask her, like, what kind of stuff goes on? What kind of rumors do you guys spread there? And like, what? How do you guys communicate? Snapchat. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. So you really, I think, caught the flavor.
Oh, thank you.
Of what goes on among the kids that, and what goes on, and what goes, and then through Libby too, you get a lot mm-hmm. of what goes through the mind of a 15-year-old girl.
Right. And I loved, with this book, I loved playing with rumors. So a theme that's become really prevalent throughout the Black Harbor series, the detective character, Nikolai Cole, he's like the one character who is present throughout every book.
Yeah.
And he says everybody lies. So everybody lies has become a major theme of the series. And I just really liked taking that for a little bit of a spin and using that in the form of rumors and just how rumors affect people. And because I think with certain characters, like, you know, there was a really bad rumor going around about Chloe and the drama teacher, and that was absolutely, you know, ruinous.
Yeah. And there's and earlier you mentioned a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That existed where you used to work. And I thought at that moment, I wondered if the bridge there's somebody who actually dies off of a bridge in this book.
Yes.
And takes a jump off the bridge. Was that the same bridge?
It is. Honestly, that I should backtrack a minute and say that, yes, the detective Nikolai Cole is in every book, but so is that bridge. So it's called Forge Bridge in the book, and it's present in every book. It's very present in the first one. It's, you know, quite a character in and of itself. And yeah, somebody jumps from that bridge every book.
Jumps or maybe pushed.
Right. Yeah. Maybe pushed.
And maybe pushed. Well, mm-hmm. The book, I think gives the reader a great, pretty good behind the scenes look at detective work. We're mm-hmm. going to be talking with a real live detective from Green Bay at noon today about what goes into it. But you, your research, talk about your research relating to that. A lot of that's based on probably your husband.
My husband worked as a, you know, patrol officer, worked his way up to detective, sergeant, lieutenant, all the way through the Racine Police Department for like 20, 21 years. And then in the last year and a half or so, became special agent for the Division of Criminal Investigation for the Department of Justice here in Wisconsin. So They're kind of like the state's FBI. They assist other police departments who maybe don't have the resources or the expertise. So I do a lot of my research through him, and he is just so great at sitting down with me and working things out, because I'm not a detective. Mm-hmm. But in so many ways, even if you're not writing a mystery or a crime fiction book, you know, you have mm-hmm. to do your own investigating as a writer. And I mean, we've gone so far as to, we'll role play interviews. So I'll be like the suspect that I'm writing about, and he's the detective interviewing me.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
So from that, I can get, you know, what's actually being said, like how the detective would actually speak to the suspect or whoever they're talking to, because it's really important for me to have that dialogue be authentic and sound real. And I mean, I'll make like miniature editions of my murder board. So I'll just print out like miniature pictures of all my characters and then lay them out like on the kitchen counter, and we can move them around. Like, okay, this person would clearly be doing this, or this person's clearly, you know, culpable for this. So yeah, it gets pretty wild.
and the tells, you do a nice job with the tells. And how a detective looks at it. And I wrote one down here. How to get to know people are lying by mm-hmm. maybe it's how they retract their lips, as you mm-hmm. write about, or how they might swipe their chin mm-hmm. When they're telling a lie.
Yeah, I know Libby has a big one in this book.
And I think we can tell that. We can at least say what it is. It's a necklace.
Her tell, yeah, she holds on to her locket, which is actually the one on the cover of the book.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I wondered if that was a locket that you had.
No, it wasn't. I don't even remember where the locket came from, honestly.
Well, it's one of those, you see the lockets on the cover. It's kind right. of an interesting. But then when you're done with the book, mm-hmm. you go back and look at the cover and you say, oh, man, this yeah. this tells yeah. a lot, gives us a lot of, gave us a lot of information in retrospect.
Right.
You would never figure it out.
Yeah.
You would never figure out the importance of that locket mm-hmm. by just looking at the locket.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really caught me that was a big surprise, the locket itself.
Oh, good.
My mouth opened, I think, my jaw dropped a little bit when I looked at that. Oh my gosh. Stories about crime, whether they're true crime or crime fiction, they're really popular right now, especially in podcasts, but movies and books. Why do you think it is that people enjoy hearing about crime and the darker side of mm-hmm. humans?
I mean, I feel like, for me, I think humans, we just naturally have like this morbid fascination with things that we wouldn't do. So I think that's why we like reading about, you know, murder or writing about it, because it's almost like an examination of somebody that's other than human. Like, could human, are, you know, is that a human that's responsible, you know, for, you know, taking the life of another, and what creates these monsters, what pushes them to that edge, and then also just this fascination with the people working those cases. And everybody loves a mystery.
Yeah.
So it's just, like you said, like picking up those threads and seeing where they lead and what connects to what. And that's what I like. I mean, I like puzzles. So it's like, you know, putting a big puzzle together and seeing where the pieces fit.
Bill in Green Lake emailed us. He said he hasn't read the book yet, But also concerned that naming things like suspects will spoil the discovery.
Well, everybody's a suspect.
Yeah, there. Believe me, there are so many suspects. And Bill, when you read the book, you're gonna it'll become apparent who the suspects are.
Yeah, we haven't given any spoilers.
Yeah. There was even one. Well, maybe I shouldn't even mention this, but there's one really good friend of the protagonist, the main person. Rowan, I should, mm-hmm. God, why can't I remember Rowan's name? A good friend of Rowan's who mm-hmm. had even crossed my mind about her.
Oh, good.
Once or twice in the book.
See, everyone gets a side eye.
Everybody gets a side eye. Well, yeah. Here's one for you. Hannah Morrissey, our guest today, her book that we're talking about is When I'm Dead. And love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Well, it's a book club day, and we're talking with the author of our book club selection, Hannah Morrissey. Her book is titled When I'm Dead, and she has it's part of the Black Harbor Mystery Series that she started. This is the third. The first two are Hello, Transcriber, and the other, The Widowmaker, and I haven't read the first two, and fortunately, I guess this one, When I'm Dead, is mm-hmm. does not, it stands alone.
Yeah.
Are the first two standalones as well?
Yes. So each book they all take place in the same like universe of Black yeah. Harbor, but they all have unique protagonists and unique mysteries. So there are characters that will occur in other books, but you know, for instance, like say take the detective Nikolai Cole, who's a major character in Hello Transcriber. He's a supporting character in both The Widowmaker and When I'm Dead, and then he'll return in the fourth book as a main character.
Yeah, which is coming up, and I'm going to want to, we'll definitely talk about that fourth book that's coming up before we get to the end. Themes, there are many themes, and I did want to talk about a few of the other themes. One is family.
Mm-hmm.
Family's a big theme in When I'm Dead, and there are some sad scenes,
mm-hmm.
but there are also some, I think, heartwarming ones
mm-hmm.
as well when it comes to family. How do you approach writing about something as complex as family?
Yeah. No, that's a great question, and I had not written a book until this one with a family at the center. So I think a lot of it is just like looking at that. For me, it's a thriller, right? So it's going to be dark and bad things are going to happen. So I just look at this little family unit that I've got of Rowan, Axel, and Chloe and be like, what's the worst thing that I can make happen to them? So I'm going to break them apart in this horrendous way, and I'm going to see how they can put themselves back together. So in that way, it's a lot of like exploring, you know, resilience and love and grief. And I think that's what's so great about like thrillers is that they are dark and they are scary sometimes and they're suspenseful. But they're also, like you said, they have like some heartwarming moments. And there's this idea that I like cling to of that, you know, I used to think that pitch dark and light can coexist, but now I know that it's that pitch dark and light must coexist. So even if your world or the situation seems hopeless, you have to put at least a glimmer of hope in there that the characters are reaching for and can attain. So it's like taking this family and like rooting for them to like rooting for the husband and wife to like work together and find their daughter. And how do they, you know, if they do, how do they rebuild? Because this has been traumatic for everybody. And what happens if they don't find her?
Yeah, what happens then?
Right.
And you're sort of rooting along the way that things are going to turn out. But there's also, connected with the family, but there's also a theme of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to believe a loved one, trying not to believe a young one could be a killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was...
And then the tension between the two people.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I... When I murder board and when I put my characters up there, I always ask them a couple of questions. One of them being, you know, what do you want most in the world? What's stopping you from getting it? And what's your greatest fear? And what's your quirk? Mm-hmm. And so when you take their greatest fears, you know that whatever their greatest fear is, each character is going to have to face that at some point throughout the book. And Rowan's greatest fear is a little bit different than Axel's, where Rowan's greatest fear is that, you know, somebody has Chloe and they're doing horrible things to her. And so she would almost rather that she's dead.
Yeah.
And she can't fathom the thought of her daughter being tortured or her daughter like torturing and killing somebody else. So she'd rather that she's dead because to her, dead is safe. And then Axel is completely the opposite. He is willing to entertain the idea that Chloe could be a murderer if it means he can find her alive. So sort of what dark parts are you willing to look into of like yourself and your loved ones? And yeah, it becomes a huge question of like, who can you trust and who's lying? And, you know, because if you don't have trust, like you don't have anything.
Yeah. And there's there's some side characters that come into play that, may or may not have anything to do with the rest of the story, and kind of fun little sidetracks. One has to do with pumpkins, because this is a perfect time for to be talking about the book, because it's sort of like everybody's setting out their pumpkins, and their pumpkins are disappearing. Now, how did that happen to fly into the book?
Oh, the pumpkin lady. Honestly, my sister was over one night and just showing me these videos that were on, it was some Facebook community group for her neighborhood, and people were posting these videos of this woman who would come to their like porch and steal their pumpkins, and she would put them in her stroller and walk away. And I mean, it did look pretty creepy. Like if you were just watching, you know, from a black and white, like surveillance camera. And I just started wondering about that lady and like constructing this character and like, why would somebody steal pumpkins and put them in a stroller? And I won't give anything away, but for me, in many ways, the pumpkin lady is a foil to Rowan of like what could happen to her. So like Rowan very much sees herself in the pumpkin lady in some ways.
And likes the pump. Yeah.
Yeah. I won't give any spoilers, but kind of, I like when there's some surprises in the books that I read where something's not what it seems or it's not what you thought.
Where did you first find your love for writing? Must go back a ways, because you were a student here at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
In writing.
Yep. I went to UW-Madison for English and an emphasis in creative writing. So I always knew that's what I wanted to do. I've been writing forever.
And what's, you've kind of given us an idea of what your process is like, but what is your writing process?
Yeah. Well, once I'm working on a book, like once it's been murder boarded, And it's like, you know, I'll have the murder board up and I'll go and add things to it here and there, but for the most part it's pretty set. And then I just go to my computer and I write. I get up, I write from 5 a.m. to about 11 or noon every day.
So you write a long stretch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I don't know, I'll go do yoga or take my pugs for a walk, and I'll kind of take a break until like 2 o'clock or so, and then I get back to it for maybe 2 hours, and usually doing more like non-writing things at that point, like answering emails or
yeah,
planning things, or social media planning is such a big part of the gig now.
It is, and as part of that, you have a book trailer out. Mm-hmm. For When I'm Dead. I went and looked at your book trailers, which
good.
I love.
Oh, awesome.
I love those trailers, but somebody else said to me, what the heck's a book trailer? And so maybe explain that and how you put those together, because they really make you want to look at the book.
Oh, great. My sister makes them for me, actually. And yeah, I mean, she makes them like so cinematic. It looks like a movie. A book trailer is exactly what it sounds like. It's almost like a trailer for a movie, like a preview, except a book. And yeah, just kind of taking some of the most exciting snippets that can give you a glimpse of what's inside.
Yeah. Jill Nadeau, our executive producer, says she's glad, she's happy when actual faces aren't used.
Yeah.
I mean, in one of your trailers, you see two people kissing. There are mm-hmm. people kissing, but you don't see the people.
Right.
It's sort of an outline, mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm. I like to leave it up to people's imaginations for the most part.
I think that's a good idea, and I think it does help spur interest. I'm certainly going back, by the way, to buy the other two books because you've really inspired me, and actually this whole conversation has even inspired me a bit more. And you've got another book coming out.
Yes.
It's called The Unlucky Ones.
Yeah. So that is the fourth one in the Black Harbor series. And so we do see characters from it. It is, I don't, the verdict's not quite in yet if it is entirely a standalone as much as the other three are. However, I would say you would enjoy it the most if you've read Hello Transcriber, because the two main characters for that one come back in the fourth one. And yeah, I mean, I'm so happy with how it turned out. It's getting really great reviews so far, just from the early reads. And this is the only one that takes place in like a scorching summer, because my editor asked, can we have some like warm weather for once, Hannah? And I was like, fine, you can get our insufferable summer.
How's this one done? Have you been happy with how this?
When I'm Dead? Yeah. When I'm Dead has brought a lot more people to the whole series, since it just like kind of picked up some speed, and it got picked up for a Book of the Month Club last October, which it really brought a lot of people. It was a great entry point to the world, and so a lot of people are starting with When I'm Dead and then going back to read the first two.
Well, that's what I'm going to do.
Good.
Thank you so much. Hannah, it has been a real joy talking with
you.
Oh,
this has been great.
I hope when that next book comes out, we'll get a chance to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Oh, me too. Thank you.
Hannah Morrissey, our guest today, and her book, When I'm Dead, and one of the third in her three-part Black Harbor mystery series. Great to have her with us. And to keep along with the theme, we have a real-life detective coming up next to talk about crime solving. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.